From time to time, I like to revisit Proverbs so that I can encourage the reading of it for everybody, but especially for any young person. I found Proverbs in my youth to be of inestimable value. It did so many things for me, and I wrote down a few of the reasons why I really liked Proverbs and why I found it so helpful. First of all, there are no long narratives to follow. Nothing against long narratives, but if you're reading stories in the Bible, you got to keep up with a lot of facts. Does anybody still get the Reader's Digest? You know what the Reader's Digest is? It's like a little bitty magazine with little bitty articles. And in between the articles are little bitty sections with jokes and little pithy sayings, all kinds of neat stuff. And you just go from one to one. You don't have to spend a lot of time reading anything. It's great. And they really are valuable. You don't have to spend a lot of time to do something to get value out of it. That's what I found out with Proverbs. No long narratives, no complex history to follow, although there's a time and place for narratives in history. You know that as well as I do. But Proverbs doesn't have that. Proverbs I found to be so practical that you could usually find a way to apply most of them pretty quickly after you read them. You read them, you think about them, and wow, I could go do that today. And there's something to be said for that, especially as a young man who's in a hurry to get things done. These kinds of things really appealed because you could just go right out and start doing them. And here's one you got to think about a little bit. But Proverbs offered me as a young man a level of maturity, at least mature behavior, that was available to me without having to wait for me to grow into it. I could read Proverbs and there were instructions on how to be wise, how to be smart, how to be useful, how to be helpful. And I could do those things and I didn't have to wait until I grew into the wisdom that would teach me how to do those things second nature. It was right there on the page. No, I can do that. So it was very, very helpful. And wisdom, I found, was a means to a very useful, godly power. I don't know if that sounds bad or not, but it wasn't bad. Everybody wants power. Everything you do, you've got to have power to do it, whether it's drive a car or operate a microwave, whatever it is, you've got to have some degree of power, but you want that power to be a good power, a practical power, a useful power, an available power. And in life, you need power to give you things like confidence. And confidence that comes out of a sense of competence. And competence came out of a sense of wisdom. Because I knew some stuff and it worked. That was a great thing about Proverbs. I never practiced anything that I found in Proverbs and I said, well, that didn't work. It always worked. And I found that to be powerful. And I hate to say it because it's kind of a catchword today, but it was empowering. It gave me a sense of power that I had a book that would show me how to do things, tell me how to do things and what not to do as well, that would help me to have a useful kind of power. There's a part of Proverbs, to go to chapter 15, I know we've come a long way into this lesson, it seems, and I haven't even led you to any of the Proverbs. I'm just telling you how great I thought they were. But here's an example of the kind of power that Proverbs gives you. Proverbs 15, the first two verses. What does the gentle answer do? Turns away wrath. You ever find yourself in a potentially ugly situation? Proverbs gave me the means to say, oh, you know what? If I'll just be careful and calm and polite and respectful with my answer, maybe I can avert some trouble here. And that's been useful to me. It's been powerful. You understand that kind of power. You're godly people. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the kind of power to do 50 push-ups. I'm talking about something way better than that. And here it is. And then he says in verse 2, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. Now think about that first line in the second verse. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable. What in the world does that mean? Now I can only guess at what the Holy Spirit meant, but here's what it meant for me. It meant that there's a right way to live, and there's a right way to think, and there's a right way to do, but not everybody agrees with the right ways to think and live and do. But if you will think it through and find ways to communicate those good things to people in an acceptable way, you can win souls. You can win people over to what's right. Because when you're young and you're in a hurry, you think, well, I'm just going to lambast them with the truth. I'll just tell them how stupid they are, and that'll show them, yeah, that'll make them want to do what I'm wanting them to do. It's like, do you have any sense at all? Well, maybe you haven't been reading Proverbs, Marty. This is the kind of thing that you learn as a young man, that things you might have rushed into thinking or found out were really wrong, you can avert by listening to what Proverbs has to say. I discovered that Proverbs was, and this is from chapter 4, Proverbs was essentially Solomon writing down what he had learned from his father. And if you have read, now we're back to the narrative and the history. If you read the narrative of David's life and you understand the history and the inner workings between him and God, then you can see, wow, there's a man to listen to because he's been through some stuff with God, and God has brought him through, and God calls him a man after his own heart. And so here's a man after God's own heart teaching his son, and his son is the one whom we think of as the wisest man who's ever lived. Why do we think of him that way? Because that's what God promised him. God said, what do you want, Solomon? And Solomon could have asked for great wealth or power over his enemies, but he didn't ask for any of those kinds of things. He asked for wisdom to rule God's people. And God's called, listen to that answer. I'm going to make you wiser than anybody that's ever lived. And that's what he did for Solomon. But Solomon is saying, I'm going to write down the Proverbs that my dad taught me. My dad was David, a man after God's own heart. To me, that provided an insight into the wisdom of the book that made it so much more personal than it could have been otherwise. Now, you probably know as well as I do that not all of the Proverbs are the Proverbs of Solomon. When you get to the end, there's a fellow by the name of Agur who's got some Proverbs in there, and there's a Lemuel whose words are in there, except be careful because it's not actually Lemuel whose words are in there. Whose words are they? If you've read it, you may remember it's things that Lemuel's mom taught him. So Lemuel listened to his mom, and he somehow made that stuff available for others to read. And Solomon read that, said, that's good enough. And the Holy Spirit said, put it in the book. So that's what we're looking at when we're looking at Proverbs. These things that down through the millennia have proven themselves worth reading and worth doing. Another thing that Proverbs did as a young man, it addressed topics I was interested in as a young man. I was interested in how to behave wisely, because do you remember being young and seeing people being stupid? I know we're not supposed to use that word. I don't mean to use it a whole lot, but I'm trying to make a point. You see, foolishness, that's a good word to use because Solomon talks a lot about foolishness. And when you're young and you see that in people, you think, oh, I don't want to be that way. I hope you think like that. And so I found in Proverbs a way to behave with wisdom. As a matter of fact, chapter 10, we'll go look at a few of these passages just to give you a little bit of the flavor from the book itself, why I saw such value in these things. But in chapter 10, verse 19, it says this. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. Oh, man, there's a warning. But he who restrains his lips is wise. Now imagine a young man, teenager. You're reading this. What do teenagers tend to do a lot of? We run on at the mouth. That's just because we're young, we're inexperienced, we're not very smart, and we think that's the way to make a way for yourself in this world. You just keep talking and somebody's going to listen to you, and it doesn't work. And then you read Solomon, and Solomon says when there's many words, there's something you're not going to be able to avoid, and that's transgression. And I wanted to avoid transgression because I'd seen what transgression had done for myself in the past and for others. And I wanted to avoid that. And so I thought, well, you know, if Solomon says all you have to do is just quit talking so much and you'll be wise, well, who can't do that? Even I could do that. Practical, simple, easy to understand. It's like God was calling me to do these things. That was a joke, by the way. I thought I heard somebody's phone going off. Anyway. 1911 is another passage about wise behavior. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it's a glory to overlook a transgression. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger. You know, you don't even have to know what discretion is as a young man. You might be quite, what in the world is discretion? But if I stop myself from being angry, if I deny myself the luxury of throwing a fit, that must be what discretion is. It's got something to do with that. And as a young man, I could understand that. And as a young man, the temptation to get angry about different things was right there all the time. But from this, I learned, all right, let's pull back on the anger a little bit. And this next part about glory, it is a glory to overlook a transgression. Sometimes people try to get things over on you. Might be a little bit of a cheating going on here in marbles. Used to play marbles. Any of you guys used to play marbles? Yeah, all right. Marbles, great game. I remember Poison. You draw the lines and you make three holes and you got to shoot into the first hole and then shoot in the second hole, shoot in the third. If you get to the third hole, you're Poison and you can shoot other marbles before they get through all the holes. That was great fun. And then somebody would bring a steely. No, you can't play. You didn't say you couldn't play with steelies. All right. You find out there are people like that you got to make rules for all the time. And that's something that Proverbs teaches you as well. But if you just overlook transgressions, however large or small they are, when you can overlook them. And Solomon says, that is a glory to you. I was young. I didn't have any glory. But I thought, well, as I play with my friends, and things get said that shouldn't be said or done that shouldn't be said. Even as a young man, I knew if I would just simply do that, just overlook the dumb things my friends are doing, there's something glorious about that, and God says so through Solomon. It was appealing to me and very beneficial. One of the things I wanted to do as a young man was to avoid being a fool, because a fool does things that are embarrassing, and I wanted to avoid embarrassment. So when I read 22:3, and there's several passages that do this, but 22:3 was one in particular. Solomon says, the prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. And as a young man, I saw the plans that other young men, sometimes young women, would make. They were going to pull some kind of a trick. And some tricks are nice and they're fun, but some tricks are dirty and they're not right and they're not good. And you could see that as a young person. And your conscience would tell you things. That's not good. That's not nice. You shouldn't be part of that. But it looks like so much fun. And then this passage would come back to mind. Oh, the prudent person sees evil. And what do you do when you see evil if you're prudent, if you're wise? You hide yourself. You back out of it. You get away from it. You don't have any part in that. And I would see that and I would read that and I would think, all right, it's tempting to allow myself to be part of plans that other people have that are not good and not helpful and going to tend to probably hurt somebody. That's the way it was when you're young. People get picked on a lot. And through this, I realized I don't have to do that. Somebody might make fun of me, and they did from time to time, but eventually they got over making fun of me, and I remember having respect. And I found out I was gaining respect from people I didn't know I was gaining respect from because I didn't take part in the same kinds of things that other young people took part in. This gets back to the power aspect. You'll see benefits in trying to behave wisely that you might not have ever imagined you would have until you've got them. And you think, well, how did that happen? What's this? Oh, because I just did that. I just behaved along these lines, and it was so beneficial. And in the same line, Proverbs taught me the kind of people to be around. And that's right here in chapter 22. Chapter 22, verses 24 and 25. And this, of course, made sense as a young man, but it made much more sense as I grew into adulthood. This is Proverbs chapter 22, verses 24 and 25. It says, "Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man, or you'll learn his ways and find a snare for yourself." Isn't that interesting? And I found it to be true. Because I had a friend who was hot-tempered, and I thought, I'm just going to hang out and see if I can maybe calm him down a little bit. And what happened was, I didn't calm him down anymore. He made me tend to get angry about things that I shouldn't have been getting angry about. And you eventually see that. It's like this passage comes back to, boom, Marty, you read that, you knew that was true, and yet you stepped on into it anyway. Whatever happened to a wise man seeing evil and avoiding it? Oh man, it's like all these things start coming back to say, yeah, we're all the same. We're all wisdom. We all come from the same source. It's God. We're all leading you into the straight and narrow. And anytime you step out of the straight and narrow, you get away from the wisdom of the Proverbs. You're getting out into the broad, wide way that leads to destruction. There's always been a broad way that leads to destruction. There's always been a narrow way that leads to eternal life. And that's what Proverbs is constantly doing. It's pointing you towards that narrow way. And as a marksman, and you can be a marksman in a lot of different ways. I like to shoot guns. I like to shoot a bow and arrow. I also like, I'm not any good at dribbling, but I like to shoot baskets with basketball. Not any good at it. But I remember at some point, somebody watched me doing that and said, "Marty, what are you aiming at?" And I said, "I'm aiming at the basket." Now you're laughing because you figure if he's asking me what I'm aiming at, yeah, I told you it wasn't any good. And he said, "Hey, if you're over at this angle, aim at that place on the backboard right there." And it just kind of dawned on me, oh, duh. You don't just aim at the basket. You have to aim at the backboard depending on where you are and hit the backboard at a certain place to go in the basket. And yes, I know you can shoot it and get nothing but net. That's great for people that have talent and skill or luck. And I'd rather have luck any time than talent and skill. It's a lot handier. It takes less time to achieve. But if you want to shoot baskets right and consistently, you need to learn some things about it, like aiming at a place on the backboard for your ball to hit that'll bounce in. And life is all just like that. Are you aiming for something in life? Is there something you want to achieve? I don't think achieve is a bad word. Is there a direction you want to go and you want to stay there? Proverbs will help you achieve those things. It'll help you focus your aim narrow your aim, fine-tune your aiming ability so you're not just launching something out there into the air. What do you think David was doing when he put that sling or stone in his sling and started going that thing around his head? What do you think he was looking at? If you're a marksman, you know he was looking at where he wanted that stone to go. And you don't have to be a marksman to know that that works. You'll do it in your driving. You're coming down the road and you're looking at a pothole. Oh, there's a pothole. I got to avoid the pothole. Well, what are you going to be looking at? If you're looking at the pothole, you know what you're going to hit. The pothole. Every time you have to look at where you want to go. And that's what Proverbs does. It says, Marty, don't go there. Go here. Here's a better way to think about it. Here's a better way to look. Here's a better way to go. And if you'll do this, things are going to turn out so much better. And so far, after 67 years, it has. It always has. A few things, I'll just give you a few more things that Solomon addresses in the Proverbs, or that the Proverbs he's collected address. It addresses pride. You and I have had to deal with pride and probably still have to deal with pride to a certain extent. Proverbs addresses anger. And you and I have had to deal with anger and probably still deal with anger to some degree, and Proverbs addresses that. Proverbs addresses things like, what do you do with children? What's the most famous passage in Proverbs about children? Train up a child in the way he should go, and what happens when he's old? He won't depart from it. You know that. Now, there are other passages. That, by the way, it's in chapter 22, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, yeah, looking at it right here. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he'll not depart from it. Have you read a few verses down to verse 15 in that same chapter where it says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Oh, we're born stupid. Is that what it's saying? Pretty much. We're born stupid, born foolish. We don't have a brain. We're immature. Something has to compel us to right behavior. Now, you might think, I thought you were talking about Proverbs being important when you're young. Yes. As a young man, I knew eventually I want to get married. I want to have children. I want to have a family. But I'm looking at all these other families, and they have these little children. And these little children are, well, I'm watching them, and I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to have kids or not. Man, some of these kids are wild. And then I read this, and I think, oh, okay. Well, see, I can read what Solomon says, and this way I can know that my kids will never. You see where I'm going with this? Yeah, your kids are going to. And they're especially going to if you ever say they're never. But if you read what Solomon says, and he says a lot about training children, you've got a direction to go with it. And you have some authority behind you when somebody says, oh, you shouldn't spank your children. Oh, you need to read Proverbs. Because Solomon says, spank your children. Talks about the blueness of a wound. He talks about do not spare for their crying. He talks about delivering their soul from hell by spanking them. And I thought as a young man, man, I need to figure out how to do this because at some point I hope to have children. And Solomon was saying, I'm pointing you towards your future, son. Some things you'll need to remember when you get there. Hold on to that. I think I want to close with what I think was probably the most appealing aspect of Proverbs. And I hope this doesn't sound bad. But Solomon personified wisdom. You know how Solomon personified wisdom? He spoke of wisdom as a woman, as a lady. And as a young man, you think about girls quite a bit. And I thought to myself, wow. Here's a woman that I'm never going to get in trouble with. Here's a woman that's going to treat me right. Here's a woman, I don't have to figure her out. I thought for sure I'd hear some amens on that, but I know you're scared. But it was true because I was a young man and I didn't know anything about girls and I wanted to know about girls. I was attracted to girls. I thought, man, girls are great. But I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And then I read Proverbs and And Solomon says, embrace her. Oh, I can embrace her? There's a her? Oh, okay. And then I realize, what does a good wife do for you? A good wife is a blessing to you all of your life. Solomon even says that. Where does he say that here? Chapter 18, 22. There's one. Yeah. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Now that's what he says about wives, and wait a minute, what about a girlfriend? Well, listen, what's the point of having a girlfriend if you're not thinking about eventually having a wife? And why mess around with a girl as a girlfriend that you don't think is going to make a good wife? And what do you look for in a woman to make a good wife? Well, you look for the things of God. That's really what Solomon is always saying. Chapter 19, verse 14, he says it a similar way, but a little different. House and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife, where do you get a prudent wife? From the Lord. So you think, all right, Lord, I need a prudent wife. I need a good woman. What can you do for me? He says, well, first, keep reading this book. This is going to be your woman until you find your woman. She's the one who's going to be your companion. She's the one who's going to do you good. She's the one that you can hang out with and learn from and be influenced by. And that's exactly what Proverbs was for me as a young man. She was a companion that did me all good, just like women are meant to do men, because we need help. And man, this was a great help. So I could go on for a long time, but I don't need to do that. I just like to come back to this from time to time to give anybody who's willing to listen a little bit of the flavor of this book so that you can see. You don't have to spend a lot of time with it. You can pick it up. You can read it for a little bit. You can just think about a couple of verses is all you even need sometimes to say, yeah, that's really good. Maybe you'll read through an entire section, but there'll be one thing in that section that stands out to you, and you go, I need to think about that. I think I've seen that to be true in my life or in somebody else's life. And it just keeps adding up and collecting, and it's such good stuff, such rich stuff. And I thank God for giving us this book and making it a blessing in my life. Well, that's the lesson for tonight. We're going to sing a song of encouragement and invitation. And if you want wisdom, the greatest wisdom in the world is pictured in the cross right there, where God says, I love you so much that I'm going to save you from your own sins through my own son. And if you're willing to submit to that, this is going to be the best thing that's ever happened to you. So if you want that for your life tonight, if you want your soul's salvation through Jesus Christ, we want to talk to you about that if you're ready to be baptized to obey the gospel. If you need prayers of the church, we want to talk to you about that too. However we can help you tonight, you're here, I'm here, we want to make a difference. Come let us know how we can as we stand and sing the invitation song. Charles?